some businesses, like the tech company Automattic, are getting rid of offices completely, letting all employees work from wherever they want. Meanwhile, IBM just told tens of thousands of workers they can't work from home anymore at all. Which approach is the future of work? This is Game Plan. Hi, I'm Rebecca Greenfield.
And I'm Francesca Levy.
And this week we are talking about working from home or remote working or telecommuting, whatever you want to call it, the phenomenon of being at work without being actually at work.
That thing where you send everyone an email with the subject line, WFH.
Yes, there is a fun jargon. Love it. Working from home is on the rise. The Society of Human Resource Management does an annual survey, and they found that 60% of employers allow some population of their employees to work remotely at least some of the time. And that's up from 20% in 1996, which is just like a huge jump and like a change in the way we work.
Yeah, we talk about the knowledge economy or like these jobs where the tools that you need to do your job are not necessarily located in one specific physical place. Basically, if you have a computer with word processing software, you can get it done from everywhere. And this is one of those phenomena that is actually technology enabled. It has changed over time significantly. There was definitely a point in history where nobody worked from home because the typewriters were at the office building. You had to go there to get to them.
You remember those days.
Oh, yeah. The rotary phones and the typewriters. Ugh, they were all the rage.
But yeah, now because of things like Slack, which is a chat platform or whatever your office uses, you can be in constant communication. A lot of the meetings are happening in places like that anyway. You can do a lot of your job using software that you can load up on any computer. Like Wi-Fi is better than it used to be. Just little things like that make it really similar to being inside the office. And yet, we see companies like IBM, which happened to be a pioneer of remote work. They've been doing this for 15 years. They are now saying, no, no more. And they're telling employees they have to either come back to one of their offices or find a new job, which is very aggressive.
Yeah, as with anything, there are going to be downsides to working from home, right? And once the pendulum swung really far in the direction of anybody can work from anywhere, we started seeing a lot of reasons why it actually wasn't that great to not be around your colleagues.
Yeah, IBM is doing this in the midst of a bit of a crisis. They've seen 20 consecutive quarters of falling revenue. When Yahoo was struggling financially, they made a similar move. And I think it's because they do see some benefits to workers being in the same place and the work being better than when you're kind of siloed in your home office or co-working space.
It almost sounds like the angry parent, like calling everybody out of their bedrooms into the living room for a family talk.
Yeah.
You can't be on your own anymore. But I've definitely experienced that thing where you're emailing back and forth with somebody and it gets too complicated to try and communicate whatever you want to communicate. And you just have to get up and walk over to their desk. Little interactions like that get lost when you're working from home.
Yeah, or some meetings that happen in person do have some sort of magic to them that you can't recreate over video conference. Video conference just has this like Wizard of Oz feel when you're talking on the speakerphone.
Yeah, when you're doing a video conference, everybody's face is in a little box, or you're talking to a bunch of people in a conference room while you're at your home office trying to make it look legit. And it feels like everything you say has to be video conference worthy. And so everything you say has this weight to it. Whereas if you're having an informal conversation in the office, you can discover a lot of little things that wouldn't come up normally because of the formal atmosphere of a meeting.
So I get why IBM thinks there are benefits to having people in the office. I do think it's extreme to say that nobody can ever do it ever. It is really, really nice to have the option to work from home sometimes. And flexibility in where you work is something that is really helpful, especially for working women in particular. There have been researchers who argue that flexibility in working from home can actually close the pay gap, because a lot of the pay gap comes from working parents and working moms specifically. And if you can work from home a day or two a week or leave the office early and sign back on later, then you don't have to kind of disrupt your entire work life to deal with your childcare.
Yeah, we see this in the office. It tends to happen kind of informally. You and I get emails all the time from people who have to leave for 2 hours for a doctor's appointment or have to go to their kids' student teacher conference and then are going to spend the rest of their day working from home in the afternoon. And there are so many offices like this where even if it isn't formalized, everybody kind of understands that to make life work, you have to be a little flexible about where you're doing your work from.
That's right. People are finding ways to use remote work to be flexible, even if it's not formally part of the policy of the workplace. And that's something our guest wrote about in a column for the Wall Street Journal. He argues that remote work isn't going anywhere and companies can ignore it at their peril. Our guest today is Christopher Mims. He's a technology columnist at the Wall Street Journal, and he's also worked remotely for a decade of his career. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So when we're seeing a giant like IBM pull away from remote work, you're arguing that the rise of working from home is inevitable. Why is that?
Oh, so many reasons. The first thing to know is just that it is continuing to expand. So if you look at numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics or Gallup tracks this, they ask questions related to this periodically. It's going up every year. We're in the 40% range, I think, now for folks who have ever worked remotely in the past year, according to Gallup. And I think that the main reason that it's expanding is that everybody likes it a lot. It increases employee satisfaction. I think it also just reflects the fact that a lot of us, if we're knowledge workers, especially if we're professionals, we're kind of on the clock all the time anyway. So remote work is just an extension of all of us having to check email on nights and weekends anyway. Plus, some companies do it very deliberately, not just for the lifestyle reasons, but also because they figure they can save themselves money on offices and office space. And some companies do it because of the talent crunch. So imagine you're trying to hire coders. You know, what are the odds that you can find all of them within, you know, driving distance of your Chicago headquarters or wherever you are? So there's tons of job functions like that where there's a mismatch between how many people are available to do a job and the demand for that job. And getting people to work remotely is a great way to solve that because your talent pool becomes the whole world at that point.
So that helps explain the rising trend of working from home. Why are companies like IBM getting sort of skittish about it? Like, what are some of the drawbacks of remote work?
So in my conversations with IBM, they said that there are certain roles that just don't lend themselves to remote work. And others have said this too, although startups that are committed to remote work disagree. So both IBM and Dell, which is another company that's big on remote work, have said that roles like research and development don't work remotely. You need people in the same office. I mean, that kind of makes sense. If you're doing some, you know, really hardcore thing, imagine you're doing like scientific research or something, you've all kind of got to be in the same place at the same time. There's probably equipment there that you just can't use on your laptop. So in those kinds of roles, remote work just might not be appropriate.
In your piece, you talk about a completely remote office, or you mentioned startups that are committed to being remote. Is that really tenable? Is that the future of where we're going with remote work? Everybody just not being in an office at all?
So one of the things that's interesting about these all remote startups is that I think that most of them started their remote work programs first and sort of then figured out, you know, how are we going to make this work? Like, they basically came at it with the idea that this is how we want to live and this is the kind of company we want to build. So a great example is Basecamp. They were kind of Slack before Slack existed, and they're a small company in Chicago. You know, they're spread across I don't know how many time zones. Similarly, Automattic, which makes WordPress.com, that's a company with more than 550 workers, and they're definitely making it work. But that is just an incredibly strong commitment from them. So they use Slack to communicate. They use these internal blogs to communicate asynchronously, as they call it. And they have to hire people who will fit into that culture, who can communicate in those mediums and who are comfortable working remotely and communicating in that way. So there are companies for which, you know, they take the extreme stance, like, we're going to be totally remote. But that is the exception. Most companies, even the ones that are all in on this, are kind of hybrid. And there's a bunch of other examples too that are hybrid besides Dell and IBM. Like, you know, there are insurance companies that do that. Bank of America has a pretty big commitment to it. There's actually this whole list from a company called Flex Jobs, and every year they rate the top 100 companies for remote work. And there's a bunch of surprises on there. It's like the Department of Commerce and, you know, various healthcare companies.
So there are a few companies where everyone works remotely, and then there are companies where no one's allowed to work remotely. But I think in most cases, it's a little bit of a mix. Is that hybrid office a really hard balance to strike?
Based on my own experience, that's a really hard balance to strike. And, you know, I talked to Jason Fried, who is the CEO of Basecamp, which, you know, he's thought a lot about this. Like, he actually gives workshops every month to teach other companies how to run their company remotely. And his feeling is that whatever the majority of your employees are, either remote or, you know, in an office together, that's going to be the dominant culture at your company. And so if the majority of your employees are in an office, that's going to be how people communicate. That's where all the meetings and brainstorms happen. And they don't feel as much of an obligation to include the remote workers, and they get shut out of decisions and all kinds of important other stuff. I think that it's probably possible for companies to be inclusive of remote workers, even if the majority of their workers aren't remote. But it just takes a real commitment. I think everyone has to be super conscious of the fact that, you know, if you hold a meeting and, you know, we've all been in this position, you know, there's a dozen people in the room and there's the two people who call in on the phone or maybe even, you know, over Skype or Google Hangout. But those people are missing out on like 80% of what's happening in that meeting and, you know, 90% of the value of that meeting. So unless people are really forced to communicate through these online tools, whether they're in the office or remote, then the remote workers are going to be left out.
Yeah, that seems to be why IBM is moving away from their remote work policy. It's just not the way they think that they can get the most out of their workers. But as you mentioned, people like it, and I imagine IBM workers are used to it. So what can offices do to make working from home more realistic for more workers?
So to make working from home more realistic for more workers, offices need to have the right processes in place for people who are working remotely, wherever they're working from, whether it's home or a client's office or, you know, a Starbucks or the field or whatever it is. And so, you know, you can't have your weekly all hands meeting at the office and expect remote workers to be bought into that. Like, it's got to happen over your video conferencing system, or, you know, some companies will just get rid of meetings altogether. They see that as a side benefit of having people work remotely, and they'll make those kinds of decisions through these asynchronous communication systems, which are like internal blogs or, you know, some kind of intranet or some kind of system that isn't just Slack, basically, so that there's some persistence and everybody can catch up and see what's going on and weigh in.
What if companies told you about how they save costs? I know that in theory, you're saving cost on overhead if people aren't, you know, coming in and using equipment. But then you described Automattics office as being this great, big, beautiful space that nobody was using. So what are you hearing about how companies are making decisions around saving and helping people work in a way that fits them?
So one thing that's been big for a while is this whole idea of getting employees to hot desk. And, you know, imagine that you're paying a ton of money for, you know, prime real estate in downtown Manhattan, and you want to just use less of that. So one thing you can do is get employees to give up on the idea that they have their particular desk. And if you know that people are only going to be around 3 days of the week, you know, have people rotate through whatever existing space you have. So it's simply a matter of saving on real estate, on the square footage that you're paying for.
Is there anything lost by giving up your own customized space that's just yours at work?
I think there probably is. You know, humans are, we're creatures of habit, and we can be territorial. And there are horror stories from when hot desking was first invented about, like, there was a particular ad agency where they did it and they got rid of all the cubicles and they're like, everyone's just going to work around these tables. And people began to kind of like partition them with their junk or their books or whatever, and kind of like wall them off. And there were like these little battles about like, well, that's where I usually sit. I think all those are growing pains, but it does raise the point that if you're going to go all in on remote or some kind of hybrid model, there's a lot of moving parts. It's not just like, oh, now we're all using, you know, Zoom or some other video conferencing system. Like it, now it's like the whole geography of your office is different as well. And Dell has been dealing with that. So Dell has more than 100,000 employees. And as they've gotten more and more of them to work remotely, they've been reconfiguring their office space and getting rid of traditional desks and cubicles.
And to me, it seems there is some benefit to being with people sometimes. I know that I like some of our in-person meetings that we have here. And you've been working remotely for most of your professional life. What are your personal experiences, both positive and negative?
Yeah, I think that it is a mistake to imagine that that human psychology is compatible with just marooning everybody on their own little island. Even the companies that are pure remote work will get everybody together at least a couple of times a year. And then people will sometimes travel more often for other types of meetings. Personally, you know, I have tried every possible configuration of remote and hybrid work. And I found that I absolutely need a place that I can go that's just like, okay, if I just need to work and I need to, you know, get things done and I have a space that's completely devoted to that, I have to have that. And I also have to be able to go to a place where it's not just, you know, me staring at four walls. And that, I think, just shows kind of the complexities of this. Like, a lot of people who work remotely will still sometimes go to an office, even if it's not with their coworkers, and they're going to co-working spaces, or they may co-work with some subset of their coworkers. And I think this is one of the reasons that you're seeing this rise of like all these co-working spaces and WeWork. You know, there's even these things that are like, there are startups that where you can, you know, rent a conference room for an hour, or rent a conference room that has a couch that you can lie down on and take a nap in for an hour because you're traveling to client meetings or whatever. So with that flexibility comes the need to flexibly be in the presence of others. And so for me, what that looks like is, yeah, there's plenty of time that I'm just working on my own, because that's the nature of being, you know, a writer and doing lots of phone interviews, which is mostly what I do. But, you know, I also have a co-working space where I work alongside people who are doing things that are completely unrelated to what I do. But that's really helpful for me psychologically and keeps me focused.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of companies where they will pay for their workers' co-working spaces when they're remote workers. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about remote work.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Chris gets at one problem that remote work doesn't really solve, which is that people still seem to want a space that feels like a workspace. They want it personalized. Even when Chris works from home, he finds a way to be around other people and be in a spot that feels like a real workspace. All that stuff says to me that there are a lot of things about the traditional office that we don't necessarily want to lose. Like, for people to do their work well, it's nice to have those things.
I think that Chris's situation shows that you can have some elements of the office that people like being around other humans, without necessarily going as far as IBM did and calling everyone back to the physical headquarters. Like, there is a more progressive way to get some of the things that IBM wants while still having some of the flexibility.
Yeah.
Like, I do fall on the same end of the spectrum as IBM, where I do think there are bottom line benefits to being in the same office as your coworkers, and I like being around people. Then again, there is something really nice about just having the option of working from home sometimes when something comes up, or if you need to travel for some reason. I know those are not like the most important reasons to need to work from home, but just having it there is like an employee perk.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way. And I also think that Chris in his article mentioned that there are certain types of jobs that lend themselves to working from home and or working remotely, and some that don't. And I feel like there are certain aspects of my job that work for working from home and some that don't. There are most days I feel the same way as you. Like, I kind of need to be around my colleagues in order to collaborate and quickly ask someone a question without thinking about it too much and overhear what's going on so that I have a sense of, you know, the stories that are being published the next day. But then there's some days where I have to dig into a really big project, and eliminating distraction is my main goal. And for that, I could be at my kitchen table, hunched over a laptop, you know, with some headphones in. So to me, having the option is really important.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing for workers. They like to feel like they can make adult choices that are good for them and the things that they need to do.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to go to the bank.
Exactly. Listeners, what do you guys think about working from home? How does it work for your life and your job? Let us know. You can tweet at us or leave us a voicemail at 212-617-0166. And now it's time for Half Baked Takes.
Half Baked Takes.
Francesca, what is your super strong opinion that you would like to share with the world today?
I have a very on topic half baked take. It's about working remotely. I have a little strategy that makes my home into an office because I don't have a personal home office.
Me either. New York City, right?
Yeah. You may be surprised to learn I don't live in a sprawling mansion. So if I work from home, I'm like sitting at the kitchen table. I work on a laptop that has a little trackpad. My workspace is very contained. In order to make working from home feel legit, I use a mouse only when I'm working from home. So if I'm on my laptop for some other reason at home, I just use the trackpad. But the mouse, it triggers some Pavlovian thing that gets me into like office mode.
I totally get that. The reason I don't like the mouse is exactly the reason you use it, which is like, oh, but how do you sit on the couch? Which is why you use it.
Right. Exactly.
To stay
gets
upright.
You off the couch.
Yeah.
That's actually, I was thinking it was like some deep psychological thing, but it's actually, that's probably all it is.
Yeah.
It forces you to sit at the table.
No. Yeah. I mean, the only time I use a mouse is at work. I think the Pavlovian thing is real.
Becca, what is your somewhat fleshed out, but not worthy of an article thought?
This is a very strong belief I have, but I couldn't really say why. So I think it's a pretty good half baked take. It's that when drinking drinks in a group, I'm a strong believer in saying cheers before you drink. I think the reason I like it is that you have to wait for everybody to have a drink and it's just kind of like pressing play on the night.
Is it the clinking that's important or is it the word cheers?
I think it's either or, just kind of the action of like, and now we're beginning and like we're doing this together.
Yep.
It's like hard for me not to do it. It irritates me when it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Are you one of those people that scolds people when they don't do it or when they don't look people in the eye?
I don't care about that eye thing. I know that I'm not. I mean,
no, I get it completely. I'm very into ceremony and rituals. And I'm also a firm believer in the don't start eating until everybody has their food and is ready to eat thing.
Yeah. I think maybe it's because
it's just manners. We just have manners, Becca.
We have manners. We have good manners here at Game Plan. And this has been Half Baked Takes.
Half Baked Takes.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Game Plan. You can find me on Twitter at RZ Greenfield.
And I'm at Francesca Today. You can tweet us with your Half Baked Takes or anything else that's on your mind. You can also call and leave us a voicemail at 212-617-0166.
If you like the show, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and rate and review. We love hearing from you and it helps people discover our show.
And if you get lonely and miss hearing from us during the week, you can sign up for our newsletter and get a little extra Becca and Francesca insight in your life. Just go to Bloomberg.com/newsletters.
This show was produced by Liz Smith and Magnus Henriksen. The head of podcasts is Alec McCabe. And we'll see you next week.
We will.
Oh, true. Cheers is for one place only. Should I say that?
A bar in Boston.